You're listening to Wins Above Fantasy, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network with Van Burnett and Steve Gisuelli.
Welcome back, everyone. It is Wins Above Fantasy, episode 136. Today on the podcast, this is Thursday, April 24th. If you're joining us on the live stream, welcome. I know we're going to have a lot of back and forth tonight as we are looking at some StatCast standouts. Now that we're at that point where, you know, it's still a small sample size, but at least it's kind of qualified by batted ball events. We've got a lot of fun guys that we're going to be talking through and fun categories as well, Steve. Talking barrel rate improvers, some hard hit improvers. Really can keep it loose as well. I know we're planning on crowdsourcing some names, so this should be a fun loose show, but an important one because some of these guys are not rostered everywhere, and these are the ones that can kind of signal a breakout before they're a breakout. So get the pen and pad ready. But Steve, very nice to have you back on. Hope the heart of April is treating you well for fantasy purposes. It's been kind of middle of the pack for me in home league, and the industry leagues have been rough, but I think there might be a turnaround underway for some of my guys. But how's it going for you?
Yeah, it's still early to standings watch, especially in like those 15 team industry leagues where a lot of movement can just like slowly happen throughout the year. It's like a war of attrition. I know our home leagues are head to head, so it's a little different. It's tough when you don't get wins early on, especially that's the kind of how I've been grinded. I think I'm like 1-2, and like it's all been close, pretty much close matchups, but in the middle of the pack, but still early. But I think it's a good time to discuss this topic because we're kind of at a stabilization point for batted balls, and we could start to focus on batted ball metrics a little bit. I think there's a big, not misunderstanding, but like misnomer with when to trust Savant data and when to like go to a player's Savant page and see all these red sliders and be like, okay, now we could trust all this, that this is real. And it's kind of like that, but not fully, right? Like there becomes a point where it's like the stabilization rate for Savant data. And there's a great article online. I'll pull up riff here a little bit on, I'll pull up who wrote it, but I believe it was on Baseball America about the stabilization point for like a lot of these metrics that we look at. And we look at plate discipline metrics and per pitch metrics early on because they stabilize much quicker. For batted ball data, like barrel rate, hard hit rate, those things take much longer to stabilize. So we're looking at like 50 to 60 batted ball events for barrel rate, and like 75 to 80 for like hard hit rate. And we're around like 70 to 80 for the higher end guys. Like some catchers are still at like 40. Some guys who really don't play that often or platoon are at like 50 or 60. But we're starting to get less noise and more signal from these metrics. And also, I think it's important to note that when we talk about these things stabilizing, it's not that, okay, this guy's barrel rate is predictive now 100% going forward. Like if he has an 18% barrel rate, he'll have an 18% barrel rate the rest of the year. No, it just means that his current 18% barrel rate can be used more in regressing than regressing to league average. Like it's more meaningful to regress, not by that much, but you know, whatever, greater than 50% of this guy's batted barrels going forward will be predicted by his current barrel rate rather than regressing it to league average. Like you still have to factor in even more regression, as hot as some of these guys been and as bad as some of these guys been, like, you know, there was an article on Fangraphs today about Aaron Judge, like, and how he only had 11% barrel rate. Like, yeah, he's probably at 50 batted balls, but that doesn't mean that he's going to have an 11% barrel rate going forward. It's going to regress towards what his career barrel rate is on top of that. So it's important to note like what you're looking at when you look at these metrics. But it's a fun time because, you know, we do have a good sample to dive into some of these names and can start to look at some meaningful stuff. You know, I'm sure just like you, I'm on Savant every single day from the first day, you know, even before the season, looking at last year's numbers. I'm on it every single day now, and it's cool that we have a large enough sample to start to at least talk about this and dissect it and look what it means going forward for some of these guys who have been good to start.
Absolutely. And I think that's the interesting part is, in a way, not all of them have been good so far. So some of these are where the kind of the underlying metrics will match up with the production on the surface. And then other ones, probably the more interesting ones, are guys that it just hasn't looked good. So maybe their roster percentage has dropped, or maybe no one's in a rush to pick them up, but yet they're kind of at the top of some of these charts and some of these leaderboards. So we will be talking about all those guys. But yes, if you guys are joining us, like we've said, we'll be here every Thursday on the podcast. Wednesday nights, we are doing the live stream, which we're retweeting from our accounts. You guys can follow us on Twitter at WinsAbovePod. I am at I'm at Van_Verified, and Steve is at Stav8818. But Steve, yeah, we got plenty to get into. Anything else you wanted to add on that article?
Real quick, it was the article I was thinking of. It was Russell Carlton of Baseball Prospectus, who has a great article. I'll link it in the show notes, just about the stabilization point for all these bad ball metrics. And basically, you know, exit velocity stabilizes around 40 bad ball events. Barrel rate stabilized around 50. And then like hard hit and like pull and ground ball rates are around like 80 to like 90 batted ball events. So we're not really quite there for everything. And still, like, it's not like a magic number switches at 50. Like, a lot can change in just a small period here early on. So, you know, it's just nice to be able to look at these with a little bit more of a meaningful lens rather than, you know, to clarify small sample, but this guy has a 50% barrel rate, whatever. You know, it's meaningful, or at least more meaningful than not at this point.
Well, let's jump into the first group, which is barrel rate. And of course, barrel rate is one of the better predictors of power before it happens, even though it's, you know, technically a result-based stat, if you will. But there's been studies in the off seasons year over year that a lot of times barrel rate can be a predictor of future power output. And for this one, Steve, the leaderboard, it's like, where do you start? The name that probably jumps out the most is Ellie De La Cruz, because
so this is year over year barrel rate improvers. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. So year over year from 2023 to 2024, number two on the barrel rate improvers is Ellie De La Cruz. And no surprise that Ellie has just been kind of taking the industry by storm. It feels very reminiscent of the Fernando Tatis year, where everyone thought that he might have been overpriced in the draft rooms. And then what do you know? The talent just wins out. Some of the raw skills just wins out. Ellie's got a 300 batting average, a 1043 OPS, 7 homers, and I'm pretty sure that's when he did not have a single homer for like the first week and a half. So definitely on a power binge as of late. And then 15 steals, which is just crazy. 3 tonight, which, Steve, we were laughing about before. But, I mean, at this rate, Ellie is definitely on pace for like a 30, 60, probably more than that season. And what's crazy is the 31% strikeout rate is still there on the back end of it. So we got to talk about Ellie. I mean, you're not going to be able to trade for him probably, or certainly not add him anywhere. But do you think Ellie is for real and on the ascent to being like a first round guy?
I asked the
same question last year.
I think so. And I think I got to give credit to Scott Chu on this. Like, he's been on this since basically the end of last year, where like basically during Ellie's ice cold stretch at the plate, right, where he was pretty much unrosterable throughout the second half of the season last year after he came up, what, in like June it was. He was pretty hot, hit a few home runs, you know, blasted a ball, whatever, 118 miles an hour, like looked really good at certain points, but was just striking out a ton. But even in that, Scott was all over the fact that Ellie started to make better swing decisions. And that has carried over into this season. He put out a tweet, it was TJ Stats who put out a tweet that that has a swing decision metric similar to what we have on PLV. I think it actually might be basically the same. I know that Kyle Bland has worked with Thomas Nestico, TJ Stats, who we talked about on this pod basically every week now. But TJ Stats tweeted out that over the last like 3 weeks of the season, Ellie De La Cruz has been making Juan Soto-like swing decisions. So he's basically just laying off pitches that he shouldn't be swinging at. And the amount of pitches that he's been given that are in the zone and they're good to swing at has gone down drastically. And he's just become a much better player at deciding when to swing at those. He still doesn't make great contact, which is why I think that even with that, the strikeout rate is going to hover around 30%. But that's not going to matter. Like during, you know, Tatis's amazing MVP caliber year, he had a strikeout rate around like 29-30%. Like you could survive with that if you have this raw talent and you're at a young age that you're basically able to mask over that deficiency in your game. So there's not really much to throw cold water on. I mean, sure, the ground ball rate is still a little bit high, but he is hitting more fly balls. He's not really popping up balls. Like he's pulling the ball more. It's hard to find. Like sure, he's not going to maybe hit 300. Maybe it'll be more like 260, 270. But like he has the speed to make up for that in the BABIP, and like his rolling 15-day strikeout rate is 23%. So, you know, he's sort of fixing that flaw right before our eyes.
Yeah, to play devil's advocate on, if you go to like his pitcher list page, the hard contact, which is basically it's calculated differently. It's the total number of balls hit greater than 95 miles per hour.
Over plate appearances. When you go to Savant, it's over your total balls hit. So like on the pitcher list page, it's a 25% hard contact rate. On Savant, you'll see a 78% hard hit rate. So hard hit
because
rate.
Because the strikeouts are pulling down pitcher list.
Exactly.
Gotcha.
Exactly.
Okay.
The denominators are different.
Gotcha. So, yeah, and that's probably where, yeah, IPA is lower as well on pitcher list. And even with that said, when you look at some of the other, like, more traditional under-the-hood stuff, like home run to fly ball rate so far has been 63%, which is astronomical. His BABIP's 381. So I think this is still probably going to be the hot streak of the season for him. I really want to pull up because he was slow to start.
Yeah, I don't think he hit a home run until like the second week of the season.
Yeah, like just looking game log at him. Yeah, it was probably about 11 games before he hit two in one game against the Brewers.
One of those was inside the Parker.
Oh, yeah, that's right. So... Now he's at seven. Anyway, I think either way, I mean, he's going to be one of the more unique first rounders if he does ascend there. But I like, what do you think the final line ends up? Like a 25 homer? You're taking the over?
So the Bat X has him at 18 homers, 36 steals, 253, 316, 431.
The rest of the way.
So that would put him at 25 homers and 48 steals.
Yeah. And I think I'm taking over on 48 steals.
unless health permitting, like I really don't see how he doesn't get to 30 homers. I know the ground ball rate is worrisome, and the fact that, you know, the home run, the fly ball rate is ridiculously unsustainable. But, you know, he plays half his games in American Ballpark, Great American Ballpark, which I think is the best place for homers. I know that Coors is the best place for runs, but because the outfield is so deep, it may not necessarily be the best place for home runs. That's Great American Ballpark. So, you know, it's not even warm yet. I'm sure there will have to be an adjustment period, right? Like, guys, the league is going to figure out, like, okay, their first approach was, we just can throw this guy anything and he'll swing at it and strike out. There'll be an adjustment that the league makes back to him. But yeah, I think I don't know if it's going to be an Acuna level of homer and steals totals, but it might be pretty close.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's Ellie. Fantastic. Congrats if you have him. I think, Steve, you do have him, which has been flagged in the comments. Yeah. So we'll keep it moving right along. And Sal Perez is the next one who's popping up on this list. And Sal is off to another great start. The 341 average, 987 OPS, six homers. And again, you got to remind yourself that he's just 33 years old because it just feels like he's 38. But after what was a little bit of a disappointing season last year, but it was okay with 23 homers last year and the year before. It looks like Sal is on pace to eclipse that and maybe scoot a little bit closer to that incredible 2021 where he had 48 homers. But yeah, the barrel rate at 17.8% after last year where it was just 8.8%. So he's doubled it and then some so far. What are we thinking for Sal Perez here, Steve?
Sal Perez is a guy that I've always sort of like rolled my eyes at. And
it's been a fade for you.
Yeah, it has. And I think it's just a massive flaw in my game. Like, he's a guy that play, like, no matter how old he is, no matter how many games he plays last year, no matter even if he was hurt the year before, like, he just catches basically like every single day. Sort of has a floor of like 250 with like a 30 homer pace. You know, I don't think he'll get back to that 2021 season where he hit 48 homers, but I mean, he's running an extremely hot triple slash like right now of 337, 394, 593. That's good for an OPS of 987 and a 181 WRC plus. He doesn't strike out much. He's striking out even less this year at just 13.8%. So there's a lot more to like as far as what he's done under the hood with his quality contact, but he's also making much more contact. He's swinging and missing at like a career best rate. He's swinging and missing like basically the best he has since when he was like a guy that struck out like, you know, 14% of the time when he first came up and was like this like good contact catcher that could pop you 15 to 20 homers, you know, early career Salvador Perez. That it's hard to remember because that was so far back ago, but you know, he's kind of mirroring the two at least to start this season. So you know, he's a guy that you go to his Savant page and it's just bright red everywhere except for that chase rate, which is kind of crazy. Like, Salvador Perez might be the guy who's like aged the most with like this Javi Baez chase rate, yet he hasn't been like totally overcome by his strikeout rate. Like, how is his chase rate first percentile?
Yeah.
And his K rate is 90th percentile. He's chasing 44% of the time. So he's swinging at 44% of the pitches outside the zone.
But only striking out 14%. His O contact is 70%. Crazy. That seems so high.
So maybe that's probably, you know, another thing to sort of, you know, throw a little bit of cold water on. That's probably not a sustainable way to keep your strikeout rate below 20%. But there's a lot to like about it at Salvi, and I think that he kind of was like, at least in one catcher leagues, like sort of like, I'll just take Salvador Perez as my catcher.
I'm kicking myself because we talked about how he also DHs, and even this year he's played five games at first. He's DH'd for three games, but last year he had a ton of DH appearances as well, And on the auction calculators, Sal was like a cut above the rest. I mean, I think it was William Contreras and Sal.
I think you brought that up on an episode too.
I know, man. And yet here we are just with like minimal shares scrapping. So, I don't know how much there is to make of it other than to say, hats off, Salvi, you're kind of aging like David Ortiz, even though, again, that's kind of an ageist comparison because he's only 33 years old. But his teammate is more interesting for fantasy purposes, Steve, because this is the first one that's truly actionable, in my opinion. Michael Garcia is on this list as well, and the surface numbers are not there for Garcia. So this is the first one where we see a guy who's legit struggling, just batting 194 with a 621 OPS. He does have four homers, four steals, 67% rostered in Yahoo, so probably available in 12 teams. But the barrel rate at 12.2%, and everything's pretty much red on the StatCast page. Last year, his barrel rate was 4%, so he's pretty much tripled that. The hard hit rate looks good. He, unlike Sal, has some really good plate discipline, which is why we liked him last year. And yeah, this to me seems like a really good buy low target, if not an add off the freeze. I've been in on Garcia, and just looking at what he's done in recent nights here. So he is on a 3-game hitting streak. Oh, he's got another one.
Yeah.
Oh, and he had another. Am I looking at the right thing? So he's got, oh, they haven't updated that second one.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's Michael Garcia. What are you thinking about him, Steve?
Yeah, I think you know, we've been talking offline just as we normally do throughout the week about our teams, and you've been pretty steadfast about how Michael Garcia is a hold. And despite those surface numbers, all of the process numbers sort of back you up there. You know, the Garcia was kind of like, I would say, a wide awake sleeper basically all off season, right? Like, he was the guy that you moaned and groaned if he went, you know, a pick or two before you in your TGFBI draft or your industry league or your NFBC league or even your home league, right? He was just a popular pick, and sort of the thing was, you know, if he can only barrel up the ball more, hit a few less ground balls, he hits the ball so hard and has good enough plate discipline that the breakout is there. You know, he stole, 23 bases in just 123 games last year. So it was like, you know, just a few things needed to go right to have like a 15 to 20, 30 homer with a decent average, kind of like, you know, early mid-round fantasy superstar that you hope we're drafting in round 20. And I think that a lot of people sort of just moved along because it was kind of in that pick range, like right round 16 to 20, maybe a little earlier, a little later, depending on when you drafted, that it's sort of the churn and burn part of your draft, right? Like, especially in shallower leagues, which is why he's probably available in a third of Yahoo leagues now. You know, I'm sure some of those leagues are like, you know, teams that aren't that active. So, as far as like Yahoo public leagues, I know that there's a lot there that some teams just sort of draft and forget about them that may just hold on to a guy because he was a guy that would have been drafted basically in all leagues. So I'm sure that would have been that's lower, on other platforms, in shallower leagues, but everything that he's doing sort of says that there should be better results, right? Like,
I don't understand, Steve, is like, so the BABIP is at 200, and last year it was at 344 with his speed, so that should come up. Over on pitcher list, like the hard contact per plate appearance is great. But yet his XBA or X average is at 232. So to me, it's not adding up where I'm like, is this just like, the ground ball rate at 47% is not bad. It's better than it was last year or the year before. And he's trading that out for fly balls.
So that's like his pitcherless XBA, right? His Savant XBA, is 270. I know there are different formulas that go in there. And honestly, I think I would probably trust pitcher. I mean, not to be a homer, but I would trust pitcher lists there because I know that Savant doesn't factor in, where the ball is hit, right? Like Savant only factors in how hard it's hit and the launch angle and gives you a percentage based on that. The fact that he does hit that, he still hits a good amount of ground balls. I know it's not an astronomically high number, mm-hmm. I mean, the fact that he does hit a good amount of fly balls too, that's not great for your BABIP. He does pop up a good amount too,
That's true. That's probably what it is.
A strikeout too, right? I just, there has to be, like, he's not going to be a 200 hitter. Like, I think the floor and his average is like 250 with how he runs, the quality contact that he makes. And if he can sustain a Bauer rate of 12.2%, there's going to be a lot more than the four homers that he hit last year, as he's already hit four this year. So, I think Michael Garcia is sort of a guy that should be added back if he was dropped in your league.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's it. And it seems like it looks like his like flares and burners have gone down from last year. So maybe he has yet to really luck into getting the most out of the fly balls. Like the fly ball exit velocity is 91.5, which I guess is above MLB average. I don't know. I still just think that it's kind of perplexing puzzle for me to see that like his X average, I would guess.
Yeah, would he's be right probably always a guy that you 260. Would. You think is going to hit for a higher average than he actually will. I don't know. I'm trying to think of like a comp for a player like that. I don't know. One doesn't come to the top of my mind real quick, but I still think he's worth rostering for sure. Right? Like we drafted a month ago, essentially, most people did. Like you still should like Mikel Garcia despite him hitting under 200 for, 4 weeks, essentially.
Yep. Well, let's move over to one that I already have rostered, Steve, but it's Jake Cronenworth, who, holy smokes, like, I think I had actually picked him up just to take advantage of the Seoul series, and he went nuts in that second game and has just never been droppable for me. His talk about a bright red Savant page, and it's led by the XBA at a 3.26, but the barrel rate at 12% is a huge improvement from the 4.4 last year. So very similar to Garcia. Cronenworth, you know, he's been around for a minute, and we saw in 2021 he did hit 21 homers. So that's been the watermark so far for power for Cronenworth. But now we're looking at basically, I mean, if you include 2021, his barrel rate was 7% back then. So it's even close to double that now. The plate discipline is great. That said, it's only translated to a 258 batting average, three homers, and a 765 OPS. So Cronenworth kind of came up as a seasoned, a little bit more mature than some other guys. So he's age 30, even though we've just had him for 4 or 5 seasons. What do you think on Cronenworth here, Steve? Do we think it's realistic that he's going to be a 20 homer guy by the end of the season with this kind of newfound power?
Yeah, I think he was a guy that I liked coming out of that shortened season where, he kind of was this Mikel Garcia type, late-ish round hype. Middle
Spore
infielder.
Spore loved him.
Yeah.
Paul Spore loved this guy.
And there was a lot of good process stats, like 10.5% barrel rate was really good. The 43% hard hit rate was good. He had a good enough max exit velocity. He didn't strike out that much. And the process stats kind of never have been that good since, despite the fact that he had 117 WRC plus season his full year after that in 2021 with those 21 homers, like you said. And it all kind of never really came back together after that, especially in like the batting average department. The K rates went up, like, and for a guy that was that sort of fringy and needed all these things to go right, he kind of became, at least last year, in shallower leagues, probably like, you know, 10, 12 teams a league, like not really viable. I'm sure in like the 15 teams, like you still took like in 2022, the 88 runs and RBIs, but that even fell off last year. He only played 127 games. I forget if he battled an injury last year, but the sort of a long-winded saying of like the process stats look good again. And that's the Bauer rate improving to a career best, 11.7%, like you said. The hard hit rates at a career best, 44%. And the contact rate has stayed the same. Like there hasn't been a sacrifice of contact or swing strike rate. He's chasing at a career best or the best since the shortened 2020 season, which really isn't a big enough sample, honestly, to even consider. So he's chasing less. Like, yeah, the homer to fly ball may come down to like, you know, closer to his career average of 9.1%. It's at 12.5%, but that's not, you know, you could carry a homer on the fly ball rate 3% greater than your career average, like at any given year. So the Padres are, I think, are better than they have been in recent years, at least, you know, I know that's funny to say since they've lost Soto, but I think it seems like their team state is in a better place, right? Just overall, and they seem like they're at least more a bit more of a contender or should be this year. So
I got something else here too, Steve. As of today, Michael Ballman from FanGraphs put out an article. Jake Cronenworth has bounced back. He should be bouncing back even more. Nice piece. Go out, check it out. I've just been kind of scanning. It's got some great info. But in addition to that, looks like this year there is a new batting stance for Jake Cronenworth.
Interesting, yeah.
Where they kind of drop the side-by-side photos. He looks like he's kind of improved the posture a little more upright. And, yeah, the hard hit rate is just year over year. This is far and away the best one where, like, yeah, this year it's at 44.4% on FanGraphs. Last year it was at 33, 34 the year before that, 35. So, you know, far and away, this is the best batted ball chapter for Cronenworth should he sustain it. So, yeah, I think it's a hold. It's just crazy that for how good it's looked, and there's other stuff in there that, like, it comes with plate discipline.
Yeah.
So that's where it's really enticing. He calls out this whomps per whiff thing and how Jake Cronenworth was seventh on that list. It's just, you got to be, if you're in my shoes, a little frustrated that it's like, okay, for all of that, you know, 260 and only three homers.
Yeah, I think the back of the baseball cards will start to look a lot better. I know I think he missed like a game or two with injury. But you know, this is one where the Statcast page, the bright red, matches the pitcher list page bright red, right? Like the ideal plate approach, the hard contact, the X average on pitcher list is really good. Like the fact that he's only rostered 63% of Yahoo leagues, like he should be added basically everywhere, I think.
Well, we got more year over year barrel guys and then a handful of other names we need to get to, but we're going to take our first ad break and we'll be right back. So Steve, now we got some usual suspects. We should probably just check off the list here. We got Bobby Witt.
Yeah.
Who, yeah. I mean, what are we going to say? Yeah.
Bobby Witt's good.
Yeah. Bobby Witt is the 12th biggest, improver. Juan Soto, the number 16 on this list in terms of improved barrel rate year over year. Are there any other ones?
Ward, we've talked about a bunch recently.
Although he did hit another one today. So yeah, that's of note for Taylor Ward. He appears to be back. But I'll open the floor to you.
There's
Steve.
Two names I really want to get to here that I think are maybe not actionable as far as ads. Maybe one is. Maybe one might be by trade. So we'll go to that one first. And that's Riley Green. I think the Riley Green breakout is happening. He hit two homers on Tuesday night, you know, but he still has just like a 247 average. He's striking out a decent amount. So, you know, maybe the buy low window sort of slammed closed yesterday or on Tuesday when he hit that when he had that two homer game, but it was just a matter of like Riley Green finally staying healthy, and I think that that's finally happening. He's barreling the ball 18% of the time after barreling a decent amount last year at 11.3%. Like that was still good. That was still, 74th percentile, but now it's up to 99th percentile. So like top in the league. I think it's like fourth overall. Fourth overall in barrel rate. Hits the ball hard. 64th percentile, 43% of the time. Has a good sweet spot, doesn't chase. He does swing and miss a lot, and I think the K rate is going to hover around, 25, maybe if he slumps a little bit, get up closer up to 30. That may put a cap on the batting average, but like he hit 288 last year when he struck out 27% of the time. Like he still got a good hit tool despite the fact that there is swing and miss in his game. But there's a lot to like about Riley Green, man. Like he's chasing less and he already didn't chase that much. He's swinging less in the zone, which, may be leading to more strikeouts despite improving his swing strike rate. He's still making decent contact at 73% of the time. So nothing crazy there as far as massive swing and miss. Maybe he's being a bit too passive. But as, he gets more comfortable at the plate and pops a few more dingers, he's also walking 20% of the time, which is great for OBP leagues. I know that's not the best for standard 5x5 leagues, but I doubt that's going to stay like a Juan Soto walk rate. But I really think that if there is anyone that's not fully sold on Riley Green yet, because of the slowish start and a slightly elevated K rate, and a not so eye popping batting average, like I would go get Riley Green. I think he is breaking out before our eyes.
Yeah, I like it. I've been kind of just scrubbing through some of the stats as you've been talking about them, Steve. And where I was going to go is because his hard hit rate is a little bit lower and his barrel rate is so high, I was going to theorize that he might be in the soft barrel category on like Alex Chamberlain's blast rate. Mm-hmm. But looking at his exit velocity on fly balls, it is unlike a guy like Cronenworth that we were just talking about, 98.3 miles per hour fastball or fly ball exit velocity, and that is 99th percentile in the league. So it seems like all of his kind of softer hits are either line drives or ground balls. He does ground ball at 50% rate, which is a little high. But yeah, when he's putting it in the air, there's a reason why he has a 20% barrel rate. So yeah, the five homers, I think is just an indicator that, like you said, the breakout's coming. Batting average, XBA 242. I mean, who cares though? He's going to end up being a 30 homer guy.
And there's a on the exit velocity and barrel rate leaderboard over on Savant. There's a new category this year. Which is a great one, I think. It's called EV50, which is the average of the 50% of your hardest batted balls. So it like takes out like any of the dribblers, like a bunt or whatever. Not that Riley Green should be bunting much or ever. So it's sort of like anything that would be a drag on your exit velocity. It filters that out because that happens, but it really isn't that meaningful when we want to measure like how hard is this guy hitting the ball when he squares it up or when he gets a good enough swing on it to make solid contact. He is 48th in the league among qualified hitters in EV50 at 102.1. Like you hear about 90th percentile exit velocity, which a lot of people, it's not public, but like you could back into it by taking like the top 10% of your hardest hit balls. This is like essentially, top 50%. That's exactly what it is. So he's hitting the ball hard, that, no matter how you square it up. No pun intended.
But on the fastball on fly balls and line drives, mm-hmm. he's at a 90, or he's fourth in the league at 99.1. So like that is just interesting to see that he's so like,
yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I guess the way you would deduce there is, you know, that his grounders, also, he's not hitting hard grounders pretty much.
Or he, you know, like, cause it's, there's other people that are hitting harder grounders than him essentially. Right. Like they're, you know, yeah, whatever, okay. 20-ish people. Right. But the
ones you want to be good.
He's square. Yeah. Like the Bat X has him for 14 homers the rest of the way. I would smash the over on that. Like, yep. Riley Green, you know, I know we've had some issues staying healthy. Like if he plays a full season, like he should hit 30 homers despite that ballpark. With the way that he's hitting the ball so far this season.
Well, Steve, let's shift over to Ahmed Rosario. The Rays are known for fixing pitchers, but here we are looking at Rosario, who's been a bit of a journeyman, never fully come to fruition the way that we kind of thought he would early on. And now we're kind of seeing, at least under the hood, some promising signs here. He's batting .341, which is great. The two homers is where it's a little, I guess, is there power to be found here? Because that's never really been a part of his game. The three steals are there, which is nice so far. But really, when you look at the barrel rate last year, just a piddly 3.4% up to 8.6, which is above league average. And it begs the question, is Ahmed Rosario in a space now where you're getting the hit tool, but you also possibly get 10, 15 homers to go with the 20 plus steals is what you're hoping for. What do you think about Ahmed Rosario in his newfound home with the Rays? Hard to believe he's still just 28 years old.
He's not only is he having, you know, Rays pixie dust on magically becoming a good player when you go there. He also was a guy who went to Driveline this offseason. So, like, the double secret formula, you know. If you want, like, your fantasy stock to go up in the offseason.
You can do one of those. You could do one of those.
Go to Driveline and then sign, like, a cheap team-friendly deal with the Rays. And, like, automatically you're going to get all the hype in the world. And sort of deservedly so. We'll get to this a little later in the show, but basically for guys that, you know, improve their hard hit rate and also all of their plate discipline metric, underlying plate discipline metrics, like Ahmed Rosario is the only player in the league to do improve your hard hit rate, improve your contact percentage, improve your O swing, and also swing more at pitches in the zone. So swing less at bad pitches, more at good pitches that you can hit, make more contact on those swings, and hit the ball harder. Like, everything that you want him to be doing process-wise is good. And I think there's, you know, a lot, like, you know, you could sort of roll your eyes at the .350 batting average, but on Savant, it's a .298 XBA. On pitcher list, it's a .276. So, like, it's mm-hmm. still pretty good no matter which way you slice it. So, you know, he's not walking much, which is, you know, never going to be a part of his game. But the strikeouts are good.
For the average, just to get all that.
Yeah,
you know what
yeah,
I mean?
Especially if he's going to play every day like he sort of has been, right? I mean, he's played 22 games this year, has 82 plate appearances. I know some
they've
guys have
more.
They've
got him hitting all over. Yeah, they've got him hitting third, fifth. Leading off sixth, like he's all over there, and he's got what 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 multi-hit games in the past like 10 games. So he's on fire, but he's still just 71% rostered. I feel like that should be almost universal.
Yeah, I mean he's ran four times. He's got two homers. Like I think those are only going to go up as he continues to earn this role and carve out playing time. Like. It seems like the Rays aren't as, you know, I feel like as soon as I'm going to say this, like they're going to take off and be the Rays and win their 95 games somehow. But it does seem like they're not as strong, and a lot of people predicted a bit of a downfall with, you know, how strong that division is. You know, it wasn't as clearly easy for the Rays to sort of take advantage of, you know, the Yankees tripping over themselves, the Red Sox, you know, pretending to be a small market team, and the Orioles still figuring it out. Like, the Orioles kind of are here. The Yankees are having a bounce back year so far. And the Rays sort of are dealing with a ton of injuries to, like, Shane McClanahan. Like, all their starters got hurt, right? So they need a lot to go right. And I think Amed Rosario may be one of those things that is starting to look like it's a big hit for them.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. And, I mean, I'm with you that the Rays are going to be turning it around. Another Floridian that's experiencing a bit of a breakout is Brian De La Cruz, not Ellie. And Brian De La Cruz, I think it was, what, last week, Steve, you and I both kind of pounced on the ad. He had two homers in 3 days. He's been eating up RBIs, but yeah, it does beg the question when you look at the 30% K rate, more or less, if this is going to come back down to earth. But the 13.7% barrel rate, compared to where he was at last year on an 8.8. Yeah, what do we think on De La Cruz? I mean, I feel like he's, you know, it's pretty real power. He came close to 20 homers last year, and it's gotten even better than that. So to me, it was like a more promising version of Jesus Sanchez, his teammate. So that's kind of where I was at. But now I'm a little bit questioning if he's worth the hold, or is he just another guy?
Yeah, I think he strikes out too much and swings and misses, and the plate skills just aren't there enough to sort of be as excited as basically every other guy that we've talked about on this list. I think there might be stretches, and I think, you know, he can sort of have a line similar to last year where he had 19 homers in 153 games with a .257 batting average. But I think maybe with the elevated K rate, and maybe it'll be 25 to 30 homers, it'll be more of like a .240 average, which I think you sort of take that trade. Like in 15 team leagues, like, I think that's a much more attractive player to have. And you know, it sort of tells you what you need to know, and the fact that he has a 99 WRC plus so far with the 30% strikeout rate, and last year with a lower strikeout rate, a .257 batting average and 19 homers, it was only a 92 WRC plus. And that's because he doesn't walk. He still doesn't walk. I think he has like 3 walks on the year. Yeah, with that 2.8% walk rate. Yeah. So, you know,
it's all coming from a fastballs Tuesday. Like, that's what's a little discouraging. And I know some players, like, that's how they, you know, they make their living, is just by crushing fastballs. It's what you see the most of. But to see he's hitting 172 against breaking stuff, like, how would opposing teams not just have the book out on throwing and breaking, heavy dose of breaking pitches? But yeah, I mean, it's tough, because I feel like when you look at his, like, ground ball rate is only 35%, 33% fly ball rate. He doesn't pop up that much. Like, that's where you want to get excited with that barrel rate and the amount of times that he's hitting fly balls. But I don't know. I mean, for me personally, I might give him, like, he just had an 0-for-4. Like, this is the time of the year where you got to be.
Yeah, I added
him
to this week. He's my cut for tomorrow, honestly.
It's just depending on, like, I think he's got a couple more games to turn it around, and then it's over. But yeah, that's Brian De La Cruz. Anyone else in this group that we want to call out, Steve, or do we want to shift over to another category?
Because
I
think we hit on that.
Yeah. So we got barrel by plate appearance, Steve. So talk to me about the difference here. This is pretty much, is there a little bit more plate discipline involved because it's not by batted ball event?
Yeah. I think that Savant changed this last year, the year before. And this is like the default sort, when you go on the StatCast leaderboard for exit velocity and barrels, but it just, the denominator is plate appearances, where when you look at barrel rate, when you look at that on Fangraphs or a pitcher list, and it just pulls the barrel rate from Savant, that just divides it by barrel batted ball event. So like, it doesn't factor in guys who strike out, guys who walk a bunch. It just looks at your batted balls and takes the number of barrels that you hit, divided by barrel balls. And like, your barrels for batted ball event is always going to be higher than your barrels for plate appearance, because the denominator in theory is a much larger number than just the amount of balls that you hit into play. It factors into how much you strike out, how much you walk, and things like that. So, yeah, I think it's a better indicator of like all around players. I think you want to look at that first.
It's still a good thing to look at
and a fun thing to look at. There's still some players who are valuable that, you know, strike out a ton and barrel the ball a bunch and are more of three true outcome players. But this is just a more well-rounded statistic. And I think it's interesting because there's some guys not on this list that we were looking at. Unfortunately, when you go to Fangraphs and look at the leaders and go to Season Stat Grid and look at the year-to-year changes, which is how we find how you can find these improvers easily, and what we do for a lot of these shows that we do, where we look at year-over-year improvers, the metric on there is barrel percentage, not barrels per plate appearance. So I think it's good to have a different section here. So we can throw out some names. I'll if you want to throw them out, Van, if anyone in the comments wants us to focus on some names, but some guys that stood out for the barrel per plate appearances, and that's just this year. So the leaderboard, not necessarily year over year changer, but guys who just have impressive numbers at the barrels per plate appearance this year. So,
yeah, I mean, I think the one that we've got to address right out of the gate is Ryan O'Hearn, who is second on the list with 14.1% barrels per plate appearance. Now, O'Hearn is like the platoon god right now, but he's one of those like Jock Peterson types that you can live with the platoon when it's a 938 OPS, 281 batting average, four homers. And I'm being dead serious when I say this, Steve. I don't think I've ever seen a Savant page more red than O'Hearn, dude. Like this is 100th percentile everywhere.
This is like Juan Soto, like Vlad Guerrero, 2021.
Yeah,
like
prime Joey Votto.
We're looking at a ton of like bright red Savant pages. This is as bright red as it gets, and it's
Ryan O'Hearn,
age 30, Ryan O'Hearn. Like,
oh man,
my God, it is absolutely impressive. Like, dude, and like, I don't know, I feel like I do this a lot of times to myself. Like, it's like I told myself to pick up that guy. Like, you know, I talked about how good Ryan O'Hearn was, and why didn't I add him when he was a free agent a week and a half ago? Uh-huh. You know, and I focused on the fact that he doesn't play against lefties, which he doesn't. He only has 3 at bats against lefties this year. But like, what does it matter when he is just essentially, you know, prime? You know, prime Pujols in right hand and right in versus righties. Like,
really,
it doesn't matter.
Dude, you know what's funny is he didn't play well. What, yesterday? Oh, 1-for-1 with 2 walks. Okay, I thought that was the pinch hit. So, I mean, it is frustrating. Like right now, he has literally played every other game, and before that, he was 0-for-11.
And it'll be even more frustrating when they have like a series versus the Marlins, who have a bunch of lefties, right? Like, it will be. Uh-huh. But,
well, I mean, 39% rostered. He's being dropped like crazy because he's either not playing or he did have a little bit of a cold streak.
Man.
If people drop, are you saying this is an instant add just because? Ball events at? Because he's a platoon.
That's true. He has 51 batted balls spent. So yeah, we hit the magic number. We're at 50. Everything I said not to do.
Add everywhere.
Yeah. Like, I'm kind of hoping that he has a bunch of games versus lefty. It goes a little cold because I would wanna add him.
Well, the other thing, I mean, jokes aside, you know, that Orioles offense is extremely high powered.
Yeah, you he's want hitting any, third. You want any exposure to that lineup. Gonna go off rundown. We got a comment here from Joe. And we could look him up. I have the leaderboard up. I'm sure you do too, Van. But Lourdes Gurriel, a guy that I don't think we've talked about, right?
No, he's so far like, this year. My home league is kind of joked about Gurriel because I've thrown out that he is like eternally in my blind spot. I think he was one of my he was the overlooked one from that Blue Jays offense for me, and I never really
people
took
made
it
fun of him for that trade, right? Like
that's right, yeah. It was like a fleece.
Who's
and
laughing
everything.
Now?
So yeah, Lourdes Gurriel pulling up the page, though. I mean, we're looking at an 8.4% barrel rate, with is exactly what it was at last year. I think what's improved has been it looks like the XBA. He's walking a little bit more right now at 300 batting average, 852 OPS. I guess my thing about Gurriel is he just kind of rocks you to sleep because he does a lot of stuff pretty well. I'm trying to find, like, even when you comb through, the plate discipline is good, and he can take a walk as well, but I want to look at what – okay, launch angle. I was trying to find one thing to point to. The launch angle so far this year is 16.6 degrees. Mm. Every year for the past 4 years, it's been at 10. So if that launch angle can continue, that's where I think we might see the potential for him to go from that 24-homer guy he was last year to flirting with 30, right?
He's the fly ball rate hasn't gone up too much, but the ground ball rate has gone down a lot, and the line drive rate is up back to like 2020 and 2020 levels, where I think he was really good in 2020, if I remember, in the shortened season. I'll pull that up real quickly. He had 11 homers, an 882 OPS. It was basically his best career year of his career. I mean, yep. It was a shortened season, but yeah, like if he could carry that out for a full season, like you're looking at a 25 homer, 300 average, because that's sort of always been his game. He's always been a good average hitter. Like, you know, if he slugs 500 to 530, like, you're talking about a really high-end fantasy player that is never going to get the helium because he's, like, older and, like even, like, his brother, right? Yuli Gurriel was yeah. You know, kind of popped off later on and had like 30 homer seasons, like mid 30 age seasons, right? So I think that this is sort of something that, while it isn't like the extreme bright red of like, say, a guy like O'Hearn, but I think Gurriel will be a great fantasy player from here on out, just with sort of what he's doing. And another thing that's really, really exciting is his hit spray charts. If you look at his home runs, like, he's pulling the Isaac Paredes. Like, they're all down the pull side for a righty. Like, all down the left field line. Like, he is pulling his barrels. So, like, that's also, like, another thing that, like, doesn't fully encapsulate. Like, he's got an 8.4% barrel rate.
Yeah.
But if all of those 8.4% barrels are pulled, most of them are going to be home runs. Like, there's so many. It's funny like because Bregman, Arizona has that right. Bregman. That Arizona has that little indent in left field, and there's like two doubles that it's like, why is that little? Why is there like 10 feet there? That's deeper. That could have been two more home runs. Like,
oof, yeah,
you know. So, yeah, maybe he can get to like a 30-homer season, 35-homer season with this pull fly ball approach and with this plate discipline. Like, it could be – I think it could be like a rich man's Isaac Paredes from last year, which I talked about Isaac Paredes a ton last year. He was really good.
Yeah, I'm curious, too, with his plate discipline being as good as it is, which is actually kind of surprising to me. I'm wondering if he ever slumps. Like, last year – just going through, I wanted to find, okay, so in June he hit 190. and July hit 159. So he had a couple really bad months, but other than that, he had some months where he went, you know, berserk with like a 352 average and 8 homers last May. So he kind of did this last season. Is the only thing I would caution that he cooled
was still,
off quite
he was
a bit.
Still pretty good last year on the whole,
no, he was.
Right?
He like, was. Yeah. He was, yeah. Overall. Like, you would take it for sure. I'm just wondering, I guess if he can just avoid those trouble months, then there's upside in the average and the homers. So,
yeah,
that's Gurriel. But it's a great point on the pull power, because that's something that, you know, like you look at like a Bregman and all the homers he gets, and his stat cast looks way chillier than Gurriel's. So if you combine the two, there is a underrated player here. So Joe, hopefully that helps out what you're looking for there. Tyler O'Neill, another question that we got to get to here.
Spelled
he's given Ryan
shout
O'Hearn.
Out. Shout out, Joe. Yeah.
He's given Ryan O'Hearn a run for the money here on the Savant page. 7 homers and a 398 average for the ex-Cardinal, worth noting. 21.6% barrel rate. He was a pretty popular
12.3% barrels per PA, which is 11th. So like both still really good.
But that 23% right. strikeout rate is you would totally take
yeah.
that for O'Neill.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So yeah, just age 28, you know, we've seen O'Neill struggle to stay on the field before, but if he stays on the field, this could be back to, you know, the type of breakout season that again, when we looked at like the shortened year, or I'm sorry, the year after the shortened year, 34 homers, 15 steals, and 286. That's the ceiling for Tyler O'Neill. And why couldn't that be possible now? It looks like he's already doing it, minus the speed a little bit.
The only thing that I'm concerned about is the concussion. Those things can sort of linger with you, like look what it did to Rizzo last year. So for a guy that has his injury history, it's always a little bit more worrisome. It is encouraging that he missed the minimum 7 days on the concussion IL. I was watching that play live. Mm-hmm. It could have been a lot worse. Like, it was Tyler O'Neill and Rafael Devers slamming into each other, like
oh,
two
that's right. that's
biggest, right. largest humans, just meaty men running into each other for a fly ball. Like, I was just like, someone's got to call this. Like, and it just happened in slow motion, but it was so fast in the same time. And like, it could have been worse. And it was encouraging that he came back after the minimum stint. It's also super encouraging. I know this is a super small sample, but his first plate appearance back, he hit a ball 111 miles an hour. That's really
great
good.
Sign. Yeah.
I don't know what he did tonight. The StatCast game log hasn't updated for that game just yet, but that is encouraging. So, you know, it's impressive that he came back that quickly, hit a ball that hard. That just gives me a little bit more reassurance that there's not like lingering effects from any of those concussions that Tyler O'Neill hit.
Would you take Tyler O'Neill over? I'm just looking at some outfielders that were picked above him. How about like a Jorge Soler, who's got 4 homers, hitting 239? I know we liked Soler, but if O'Neill's offering this type of pop, who would you take between those two?
Based on the results this far, I would take O'Neill. Jorge Soler, batted ball metrics are not Jorge Soler-like so far. I think a lot of that has to do with him being signed late, him being in a new park, in a new league. I know he spent a brief time in the NL in Atlanta, and was amazing during that run. But, you know, I think it's going to take Soler a little bit of time. I'm personally holding on to him in our home league. But that being said, I would definitely, you know, take the proven results so far from O'Neill, given what he's shown in his process stats.
Okay. I'm scooting. I'm not letting you off the hook yet, Steve. Anthony Santander, great lineup context, but just batting 216, four homers, 17 RBIs. Santander was drafted as some people's OF1. Would you have Tyler O'Neill above him?
Give me Tyler O'Neill.
Okay. All
right. And these guys were drafted before Tyler O'Neill, correct?
Oh yeah, quite a bit before. Yeah.
I think Tyler O'Neill sort of like burned everybody and everyone at least once over like the last 3 years.
Yes. So it was a little suppressed.
So there was definitely some suppressed. I think only like Vlad Sedler was the guy, only guy who still held on to all his Tyler O'Neill shares for all those years. I know I personally bought into him like the year after his breakout year. I think we talked about him with Tyler O'Neill with Paul Spoerer on the podcast, like after his breakout year in 2021. He sort of warned us about some of the potential holes
Domingo
in his
Santana
game.
Yeah,
the Domingo Santana, the famous Domingo Santana comp. So, you know, I think there's the hate went too far on Tyler O'Neill, and it's really cool to see him putting it all together again. And I honestly wish I would have been more of a believer in that. And it's hard to believe that.
Me too.
When a guy there's something that always goes wrong, whether it's hurt, whether you know he sort of anytime that he looked like he started to figure it out at the plate, he would get hurt. When he had long stretches of being healthy, he didn't have it together at the plate. Like, you know, it just was one thing after the other. So you kind of sort of just move on. And it's really hard to just buy back in based on, you know, some skills that a guy shown three years ago at this point. But there really was always a reason to believe, and it's a hard blind spot to cover there. But I'm glad that it's happening. And if you have Tyler O'Neill, I think you should be very, very happy.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Steve, our final category here is hard hit improvers. So, again, we got some names that, you know, are not as actionable with a Bobby Witt Jr., Adley Rutschman. But one that I was kind of interested in was Brenton Doyle because, of course, anytime we've got a Coors guy, it's worth checking out. And Doyle, I think the main concern is that the K rate is up at 30%. That said, he's hitting .306 right now, three homers, two steals. We've talked about him in the past a little bit. The hard hit rate is up. The barrel rate is a little underwhelming. It's 7.1% after it was up near 9 last year. The ground ball rate is not that high. He does get some fly balls and line drives. It's just the barrels aren't there as well. What are your thoughts on Doyle? Is this just some noise, or do you think that this is kind of a Coors streamer that we could target in certain instances?
There's been a lot of interest for me in Brenton Doyle for a guy that, you know, isn't really fantasy relevant.
He's on a four-game hit streak.
Yeah, yeah. But, like, anytime I run one of those queries and, like, filter for a bunch of different improvers and a bunch of different statistics – like when we did the play discipline show, I think that was last week or the week before, Brenton Doyle was on a bunch of these lists, despite the fact that he's still striking out 30% of the time. So that goes to show you where his K rate was in 2023. It was 35%. So of course he's going to improve on all these play discipline metrics, and like even like the whiff rate, like it's improved. It was at 36%. He was swinging and missing, last year for his, you know, whiffs is per swing. So 1/3 of his swings he was swinging and missing. This year it's down to 30%. So like a little bit better. So it's kind of like a false advertisement almost. Like he's improved it from like league worst to like bottom 30th percentile, bottom 15th percentile. He doesn't take a walk.
He hits
too many ground balls, but he does hit the ball hard. He does have a sweet spot. It does have a good sweet spot. It's not a horrible ground ball rate. It was last year at 50%. It's 41% this year. So there's more line drives, which, you know, goes to show for the sweet spot percentage. Hasn't popped the ball up. That also helps. But I think it's a good core streamer. You know, that could run into a few homers, steal you a few bases potentially. And as far as a weekend stream, I think it's a good weekend stream. The Rockies are off on Friday, but they play in Mexico City. And if we remember the Mexico City games from the last few years, they have just been
Joe Musgrove absolute, gave up 20 runs.
Absolute slugfest, yeah.
And that's when, dude, so, I about lost it. Because I told you I did the Marmol thing with the heavy relief. My SP 1 and 2 are Pivetta and Fromber, who have been on the IL. And Fromber's note is like, he's set to return. They're talking about putting him out there in Mexico City. Yeah, and I was no, don't do that, please. You're going to wreck this guy's ERA for the whole season.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's true, though. That could be an avenue.
So, yeah, if you could afford an off day and you're in a daily moves league, add any Rockies that could be available, and then Astros. But, you know, most of the Astros lineup is basically rostered at this point. So, yeah, I think that there is something to like in Brenton Doyle in at least as like a streamer for home games and when they play in Mexico City.
Any other names on the hard hit improvers, Steve? I mean, Spencer Steer is rostered. Ty France is an interesting one because he's another guy who went to drive line.
Yeah. I think we talked about him last week too. Yeah.
Yeah. Just 12% roster. So let's look at Ty France real quick because I know his surface stats have been terrible, right? So, not as bad as I thought. A 267 average, but a 645 OPS. He is yet to homer, but a league average barrel rate. 90th percentile hard hit rate. So he's definitely hitting the ball hard, just not, you know, the launch angle is down from where it was last year. Looks like fly balls are down, but the line drive rate is up. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's a watchless guy.
Pull percentage is down, so maybe he's letting the ball travel a little bit and hitting the ball harder that way, which...
It's great to see he's hitting breaking stuff a lot better, too. But
yeah, tough ballpark to hit into, but you know I think that there is something to like here with France. I think that he definitely could get back to the 2020 season or 2022 season where he had 20 homers, had a 774 OPS. Maybe if he carries over some of this hard hit rate, the batting average goes up a little bit, and he can like sneak to closer to like an 800 OPS guy, which is good. The Mariners should at least be a decent offense, despite the fact that they play their games in one of the worst hitting environments in the league. But you know, their lineup's good enough. I think that Ty France is, anytime that a guy that's like as good of an overall hitter, like, you know, someone that could hit, 280 consistently throughout his career, have a few 300 seasons, and then looks to add power by going the drive line, that should be interesting. Like, right, he, like, talked about how, like, his swing was, like, broken last year. It was a pretty disappointing year after that 20-homer season. Even 2021, when he had 18 homers, had an 813 OPS, a 291, like, was fantasy relevant and was like a good player. And it sort of all fell apart last year, despite him getting, you know, his career high in games, career high in plate appearances, finally staying healthy. So if you could pair that with this hard hit rate improvement, and start to pull the ball a little bit more, I think that there is a fantasy viable player in here that's probably available. Just 12% in Yahoo leagues.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's just the production's vanished. So I think that's it's all there to, again, a watchless guy, because if he starts to put it together for like a week, I think the narrative's there and some of the underlying stuff is there. So, yeah, I like it for France. Yeah, it's a good list. I mean, more than anything, it's just a reminder, guys, to get out, you know, peruse around on some of the leaderboards, because they unlock, there's a handful of names we didn't even talk about that are on our rundown, and that's exactly why it's great to go out this time of year. Like Luis Garcia is a great one, Steve.
Just yeah, that we didn't 17, get to. Yeah,
17% rostered, and this is a guy whose barrel rate is 12%. And his hard hit rate pretty much doubled from last year so far, 23 years old. So, like, yeah, these are the guys that are out there, and it's worth just getting active on it. But any closing thoughts, Steve, as we kind of wrap up here? A lot of names, but I think, yeah, as long as they're guys who are generally available, I think most of these are either watch list or add and see what happens. But what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think that with this, like, it gives you a little bit more clarity, but a guy that you could add and sort of wait and see for a little bit, you know, rather than sort of just like this happened with me with like Jordan Westbrook. Like, I added him early on. He went 0-for-3 or 1-for-4 with like a steal. And like, I moved on the next day. Like, mm-hmm. It's harder to do that because you're early in the season. You're just sort of streaming as you go. Now that we have this larger data sample, you could sort of add a guy, and even if they don't produce right away, you have these underlying results or underlying process numbers like barrel rate that you could believe in a little bit more because we have the sample to back it up. I know It's sort of counterintuitive because like we're now at April 24th and Westbrook is gone and now his numbers look good, but there's still guys out there that are like this. Like Mikel Garcia is a perfect example, right? Like, it looks horrible on the surface, but there's still reason to believe.
Yep. No, well said. I mean, I'm taking it to myself. You know, it's always helpful going through, but it's like Cronenworth, hold. Brian De La Cruz, got to give him two more games. So, yeah, it's a very, very useful. And then I will be watching closely when Ryan O'Hearn gets back out there. I mean, that's the banter one of the show so far. So, great show, great talking. And thank you guys for joining us either on the live stream or listening to the podcast. Again, we'll be here every week throughout the season. Great to be back. We're in the heart of spring baseball, which what do we want? So thanks again. You guys can follow us on Twitter at WinsAbovePod. I'm at Van_Verified. Steve is at Stav8818. But that wraps us up for episode 136. Thanks for talking baseball with us.
Thanks for listening, guys. Later.